The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
Unfiltered opinion.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
As you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
I'm Jimmy Moyaha.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning, Insider community. Welcome back. We have missed you guys. Yeah, that's the show. Goodbye. No, just kidding. It's good to be back. We took a bit of a break because we're allowed to do these things. There were a lot of holidays. It didn't make sense. There was a lot of confusion. And now Sy tells me the unfortunate news that we are back to 6 weeks of not a single break in the week.
5 day work weeks until 16 June. It's a Monday, 6 weeks today.
Can't we space that out? Can't we just like take some of the April holidays and just like sprinkle them into like a random Wednesday
don't touch,
here?
Don't touch the April holidays. The April holidays are good. What we need to do is sprinkle some holidays around. I take things into my own hands. I've got some holidays coming up in those 6 weeks. I can't wait 6 weeks.
Okay, there
we
go. I've
got a wedding. I've got to go to Cape Town to do some talking. And yeah.
I think we're both in Cape Town to do some talking this month. End of the month, mid-month, end of the month. I might do Nampo as well, middle of the month, next week, if not.
Nampo's too cold. Actually, my Cape Town is 3rd of June.
Oh, okay.
Nampo's too cold.
Nampo is cold.
I can't do Nampo.
Nampo is.
Well, I could. I could do it between 12:30 and 2.
When the sun is at its best.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot that happens and there's a lot of stuff that we need to get into. Shout out to all of those that are joining us on our live stream and shout out to our TikTok community. As always, we love having you guys on board. There we go, incognito, Jimbo. You guys, we've missed you guys. Hey, it's been a tough time. Market matters this week. We're going to get into the developments that are coming out. We've got interest rate decisions out of the Central Bank of South Africa, as well as the US Federal Reserve. We kind of think they're equally as important at this point.
MPC's end of month.
Yeah, this month.
Okay, this month.
So this week is Federal Reserve.
Wednesday.
Yes, sorry. MPC is next week or the week after week that. After. So not this week. But what we are going to be looking at is that MPC meeting will coincide with Budget 3.0. Yes, folks. It is the third iteration of the budget speech. I've spoken to National Treasury. I spoke to them last week and I asked them, my very first question was kind of, is this going to essentially be a different budget to what we got? And by all accounts, it is a new budget.
By accounts, it's a new budget. They are also including the DA and other parts of the coalition are involved. Although the minister did say that they should actually come in August ahead of the MTBPS budget thing in October. But it does, just by all accounts, as you say, is going to be a new budget.
Yeah.
From scratch, which is only fair. And frankly, it comes back to, you know, so there's two challenges. Firstly, I think our GDP expectations from Treasury, which was 1.9%, has gone lower in the months since that budget take one. Would have been 3 months. We now, what the IMF is saying, one or something like that. Mm. So revenue's getting a nice stack to it. And surely, after all of these months of talking, the minister has lots of ideas on where he can find a measly 17 billion, because that's all that 0.5% VAT gave.
Side note, before we carry on with the budget speech, we're carrying on with our names. This week, I am Dylan, but spelt D-E-L-A-N. Simon has managed to somehow retain the correct spelling of his name, but we will see how that continues to unfold, and we will see when or how many of these we need to do before Starbucks gives us that sponsorship. Shout out to Starbucks or not.
Hey, Starbucks.
The budget speech coming up, there's the measly 17 billion was one thing. There was also the question of the comment made by the minister to say, now that I have to cancel the VAT increase, it's now going to cost us 75 billion. So I then went and asked, and I was like, how did we get from, like, the math wasn't mathing at the time. And the DG of National Treasury said that, well, of course, it was the 17 or 11 odd billion or whatever the amount was for this year. It was next year's continuation. So next year's
$30 billion.
Yes.
Because it could go another 0.5%.
Yes. So the new 0.5% and the existing 0.5%, and then the other years and all of that going forward.
Okay, that's 60-75.
Yeah, so they do the medium-term planning and all of that sort of stuff.
That math adds, but so you need $75 billion over 3 years.
But again, even with the $75 billion over 3 years that you need, getting that from VAT as opposed to getting that from austerity and cutting expenditure, surely that should be a focal point. Surely that should be a starting point to say we have things we can cut back on that are reasonable. And everybody's going to say, oh, but what things and how are you going to justify where to cut or whatever? Folks, 2023 or 2024 financial year, we spent almost 4 billion rand on VIP security.
Yeah, and 7 billion on diesel for Eskom. I mean, there's 11.
There's 11. There we go.
We're not even trying hard.
Get us a calculator. We'll try harder. We'll see where we get to. You know what I mean? We can find the 75 billion.
And in fact, there's two presidential protection unit vehicles parked downstairs.
Mm.
Like the president isn't here because there are only two.
Right? Yes.
If he was here, there would be...
So I drove through Sandton this morning. Drove past the convention center. And there is a strong police presence there. You know, remember the old Casper vans, the big white ones?
Mm,
they are parked outside the convention center. There is police deployed within the entire square block of the convention center, down Alice Lane, down Maud Street, down, I think it's, what's the other one that goes down? It's Alice Maud, up the one that goes up past the Michelangelo. There's a strong police presence there. And I don't know what's happening. I haven't heard anything about a dignitary being there. The closest thing I can think of that took place at the convention center recently was, I think, over the weekend or last week, the roast of Helen Ziller, but I don't know if that was there.
I don't know if it would be that much tech.
Yeah, there is, and I don't think there's a G20 meeting or gathering just yet.
I just had a check here, and so key dates, no, there was December, there's a bit happening in February, and then it's November.
Yeah, so there is a strong police presence right now in Sandton City. I don't know if we're doing a dry run of some sort. Perhaps it's rehearsal days for November, but that is something else. We're getting sidetracked, folks. We apologize for that. Back to budget 3.0. We are expecting to see a lot of new things that are going to be announced in this time's budget that might not have been announced in the previous budgets around how they can make up the shortfall and all of that. But is 3 weeks enough for them to rework the entire budget?
It has to be. Oh, yeah, the short answer is...
Well, it was enough to rework the first one into the second one, I suppose. Yeah.
But it also comes to what we're looking for in our budget is, and it's what I criticized the first budget 1.0, whenever that was, 21 Feb or whatever.
The one that didn't happen, the one that wasn't delivered.
The one that I went all the way to Cape Town for, and I listened to you on the radio for a long
time. Oh, that one. The one I still have scars and mental trauma from.
Because it's like, budget's cancelled. I'm like, so what's Jimmy going to do for 2 hours now?
We're going to talk about how it was cancelled.
I went and sat around a pool and had a drink. Bring some clever ideas. I mean, just bring one clever idea.
Not 10.
Just one. Just a clever idea somewhere. Like, for example, I don't know, Eskom, we're going to have load shedding instead of diesel. And that's not a clever idea. Mm. But you know what? VIPs, you're on your own. He has a stun gun. I mean, something like that. Let's come with at least one clever idea that might not make up all the shortfall, but shows that there is some innovation and cleverness happening in our budgeting process, rather than just
some concerted same old effort.
Hey, for example, 20% of our budget is going into education. Come on, really? 500. It was 509 billion for this year, which budget, which we don't have. Really, we just don't get the bang for buck there. What can we do in that regard? And I'm not saying that we should cancel the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. I think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should attack the social grants. I think they're important. But let's come up with some clever ideas. Let's issue some, I don't know, maybe we issue 100-year bonds at 0% or backed by gold. You get gold bars at the end. I don't know, something like that. Let's come up with something different and clever.
Okay. So I support the innovation aspect of it. But what we've seen in the past is it's not South Africa's inability to raise capital, to raise money, to revenue. Edward Kiesvetter and his team at SARS had a surplus above expectation of 8 billion rand. They can find find the money. Mm. It's how the money's deployed, isn't it?
Well, and that is the problem.
Which is where the budget comes in.
And it comes back to our spending. And it so for the education, and I can't, the facts are so out of date, I'm not even going to quote them. But like, we spend way more than Mozambique per kid on education. Mm-hmm. And yet Mozambique is in like top quartile and we're in the bottom quartile. Mm. It's that. We spend our money badly and inefficiently. And that is the challenge. And so maybe it's a case of, okay, if you're a public servant and you find us R1 million of waste, we'll give you half of it.
Mm. Yeah,
how about that?
Okay. So now we are rewarding service delivery.
Well, yeah. So someone could go create R1 million of waste and claim it. I appreciate the loopholes. But let's get some out the box.
Some innovations. Some thinking, some...
Because we are in trouble.
So the interesting thing about the looking at things from a different perspective was I heard, and I was driving into the studio this morning, I heard the comments made by the ANC's Secretary General, Fikile Mbalula, who's a former minister within the cabinet, saying that the ANC has been blamed for the VAT increase and the ANC has started engaging in conversations to ensure that there's certain critical line items that are not left out of the budget because they were blamed for the VAT increase. Blah, 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 blah. Effectively saying that the VAT increase was not their fault. And I found myself sitting there thinking, and I don't want to get political about this because that's not what our show does, right? I found myself sitting there thinking, the current Minister of Finance was deployed from the ANC by the president of the ANC, granted in his capacity as the president of the country or whatever, but he's not a opposition party deployee. So how far off is the policy that you can say, oh, this was not an ANC idea, but rather let's throw the minister under the bus and say this was a Minister of Finance idea and he came up with it all by himself. Now, the Minister of Finance in the past has owned up to it. He's never been shy to own up to the decisions that he's made in putting together the budgets with his teams and all of that. And I applaud him for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there was also a time when he was deployed within the ANC and he made some tough decisions there and people didn't like him there. But I found it very interesting that when we are at a time where we are trying to provide solutions going forward, political parties are saying, oh, this wasn't us. The same political parties that voted for this thing to go ahead. Oh, this wasn't us. They vote when we had the vote for the appropriations bills and all of those things. They were the parties that voted in favor of these things. Mm-hmm, now they're the parties saying we didn't support this.
Yeah.
But we digress. That's neither here nor there. That's what it is. I want to get your thoughts on something, Simon. James wants to know our thoughts on ASP Isotopes plans to list in South Africa. Now, they're listed in the NASDAQ. I spoke to the ASP Isotope chairman and CEO last week about their planned listing, Paul Mann.
Mm-hmm.
They intend to come and list in South Africa. They've got a listing in NASDAQ, so this would be an inward listing into South Africa. And I raised the point to say, you don't often see those things happening, right? Inward listings and all of those sorts of things. Now, the timing of that is one thing. I also raised the point of saying, but tensions are strained between the US. Why
I asked him about tariffs. He didn't like that question at all.
He said to me, look, a lot of the things that they produce at the moment are kind of exempt from the tariff regime as it stands, and they hope that it'll stay that way. So they'll be okay from that perspective. But your thoughts on the listing overall from a market's perspective?
No, look, new listings are great. It's nice to have so it is actually a South African company. It's mostly
they've got about 90% of their staff. No, 98% or so of their staff.
In South Africa. Now, I think they've got 4 staff in the US, and that's probably the bosses.
Mm.
I like the concept of it in terms of this looks lacquer. It's new, it's innovative, it's isotopes, it's clean energy, food security, international orders, etc., etc. And new listings are always great. Make no mistake. And this would be about an $8 billion listing. So it's a proper chunky. It's not a little small cap. It's kind of like a little mid cap. So I really like it. I also chatted with Paul last week. Lots to like about it. But Julia Tetelevi wrote an article this morning, and there's a short seller out there who's like, this thing is a house of cards.
Mm.
So go to Currency News and read that. Mm. But the listing is mid-year-ish. So it's mid-year is not that far
away. Subject to approval. And all of those
JC,
sorts of things.
What the JC is going to say? No?
No, of course not, right?
To a listing?
And also with that listing, how does that then affect, from a JAC perspective, how does that affect things like your weightings? Because for the longest time, things like Naspers have been such a heavy concentration on something like the top 40.
Yeah.
I can imagine something that's got liquidity in the US, that is, I think it was, around 7 billion rand, four to 7 billion rand in market cap in South African terms. That would obviously then put it somewhere, not at the bottom of the list of the JAC stocks that we have.
So it would come in, it would get into the all share. It wouldn't get into top 40.
Mm.
So the way they typically do it is free float on the local shareholder register. Mm-hmm. In other words, how many South Africans hold it? So let's say market cap's 8 billion, but only 10% of the shares are held in South Africa, in other words, on the straight register, mm-hmm. then it actually only gets quantified as an 800 million market cap. So it will probably be quite small unless South Africans go absolutely crazy for it. Now, a big part of it is, oh, won't it be great? And, you know, we're getting some funky tech listings in South Africa. Our current tech listings is like Data Tech and Mustek, and they're leaving, et cetera, et cetera. Yes, but, and the but is, don't get me wrong, I like these on the JSE. Mm. We could buy them on the NASDAQ.
That's fair. That's fair.
The difference is, of course, none of us had heard of ASP Isotopes until they made the announcement.
Absolutely.
Because there's, 10,000 stocks in the US, and how the heck do we find half of them?
Yeah, and the other thing as well is when you then start to look at these listings, you look at, if I want to access it via the NASDAQ, do I then have foreign currency exposure and all of that and offshore products and blah, blah, blah? Does it fit into an ETF? All of those sorts of things. Yeah. So we welcome the listing. We are always happy to welcome new participants and new things. It gives diversity to our exchange. And I think our exchange does need that. I think it does need a lot more in terms of, like, granted, we'll never get to the diversity that exists on something like the S&P 500 or other international markets. But you can't have a market that is continuously the same companies, the same size, the same, you know, you need growth, you need, and we're not getting that many new listings from our own local companies that are based here, because some companies are actually just looking at it and saying, but delisting, existing companies are delisting and new companies are saying, is it worth it to list? So if you want an exchange to grow, you kind of do need new listings in whatever shape or form.
And this is certainly what the JSE is focusing on. We've had a couple of property stocks coming out of the UK. There's the one, I think it's a hospital group. There's another which is all about, they own the buildings which Carrefour and others sort of operate out of, these sort of mega store type things. Mm. So we have seen some of them come in. And again, we could have gone to AIM and bought them there, but it creates awareness. It creates some ease. It means I can just simply put them into my little fund. It also means, you know, we don't have mandates like the CIS guys do. Mm. So suddenly a CIS, one of your unit trusts or you know, whose mandate is JSE listed can jump on that bandwagon as well. So it does create some opportunity. I don't know. I mean, we haven't seen a massive amount of liquidity in those REITs that have come. I don't know why, because I think they're certainly nice and attractive. Maybe the pricings are wrong, but they're different. You know, we don't have a health REIT on our market. We don't have a supermarket REIT on our market. So it does bring some extra flavor, and we don't have anything like the isotopes people.
Mm. While we are looking at things that we do have on our market, I want to take a look at the JSE and how the markets have opened. We're going to see if we can do this a lot more going forward, just looking at how markets have started off the day and potentially how they're going to be starting off the week. And I see that the JSE is in green territory at the moment. There is a lot of quiet in the market today. Asian markets are closed, various holidays. The UK has decided they want a banking holiday as a result. And I suppose it's just our markets mainly and the US markets that will then kick in. But our markets have opened in the green today. We are still kind of sitting around those all-time high levels on the top 40 of around 84,000 points. And I'm guessing that markets are kind of going to stall around that range until we have some inclination of what direction.
Yeah, until we get like the US Open or something like that. Yeah. That'll start to kick us through. So, you got to love Japan, man. Japan have the best holidays. Today they're closed for children. Hong Kong's closed for Buddha's birthday.
Buddha's birthday. Yeah. Hong Kong.
Yeah. Look, we do it. We do Christmas. Mm. They do Buddha's birthday.
Hong Kong is an interesting thing, and we will get into the Hong Kong one in our next update on the trade wars, because Hong Kong has historically been a neutralish kind of ground for China and the US, and recently has come under fire has been the subject of contention because the US blocked a listing that was set to take place. Do you remember Cattle Batteries, CATL Batteries?
Yeah.
Faisal, one of our YouTube community members, put us onto that stock and asked us to get our thoughts on it. And they had planned an IPO, and their IPO was...
Because they currently trade in Shenzhen, I think.
Yeah, so they had planned an IPO. Their IPO was kind of underwritten by Morgan Stanley and I think it was Bank of America. At the very last minute, the two banks pulled out for what looks like nothing other than political reasons. So this is now a very interesting development in the trade war space, where you're seeing political interference coming into markets, where markets historically, and I mean, America has bragged about it for years, saying that they are a free market economy, you know, there's no interference or manipulations or those sorts of things. And clearly something's amiss. But that's for our next update on the trade war, which we will do at another time, because we are taking a bit of a break from the trade wars. We're taking the 90-day break seriously, and we're going to try and discuss the trade war as little as possible in that period of time. I think we have run out of time, folks. Thanks so much for tuning in to Market Matters. We are going to get into our deep dive. If you might be wondering what the deep dive is about, as you can see, there's a little something on the table that doesn't look like it quite sits there on the regular basis. I recently returned from a trip to China while we were on the break, and I am pleased to report some interesting findings about the world of luxury. Those that have been on TikTok, those that have been everywhere on social media, listening into how China has said that they were the ones that produced all the luxury goods in the first place, stick around for the deep dive. We've got some very interesting things to show you there. But that's Market Matters, and that's where we're going to leave it for now. In our deep dive this week, we are diving into the world of what they call fake or faux luxury, I suppose. Those that have been keeping any eye on social media have seen all of the comments by TikTok manufacturers claiming that they are the ones that have been manufacturing all these luxury products for the longest time. And I thought perhaps, given that I recently returned from a trip to China, I could weigh in on that and perhaps shed some light on what I've discovered and what we've found. Before we get that going, I got you a little something from China. I hope you and the missus like it.
So, just like pretty box.
Very pretty box.
Yeah. And I'm going to have to do the surprise because I've seen this already, but it is chopsticks. Weirdly, whenever we get food that needs chopsticks, my wife throws away the wooden things and she uses...
So she prefers those chopsticks?
Yeah, although ours are not fancy like this. Ours are just plastic ones we stole from a restaurant probably in the 80s. Been washing them ever since.
Yeah. So it's difficult to find something. I've always been one of those that believes that if you're going to get someone something, at least let it have some purpose or meaning or thought behind it. Don't just pick up a trinket of sorts, right? And it was difficult because I was like, size got everything. What do you get a man that has everything, that seldom needs anything? And then I was like, find something that has permanence sustainability.
Yeah, what you're doing is needling away so I will remember you for the rest of my life.
Yes, and hopefully leave me in your will.
The chopsticks.
I'll get the chopsticks back in the will. Yes! Long-term strategies here, folks. Long-term thinking. But yes, that was the one thing. And yes, the discoveries that I made. So everybody had been talking about the stuff on TikTok. Oh no, this is the bags. This is this. So I thought to myself while I was there for something unrelated. I was there for a media launch by an international company. And we'll do an entire segment on that. We'll look into that fantastic gifting from their perspective. I might even do that at the end of the show. I have the gift with me. It is just off camera. I might bring that into the show and show you exactly what I mean when I say thoughtful gifting, just thoughtfulness that goes into it. When we were in China, I thought everybody's been going on about this is where I get my stuff from, this is the plug, this is how you get your luxury goods, this is that.
For fraction the price, but same quality.
Absolutely. So I thought, let me see if I can find the plug. Let me see if I can find that source of good stuff, right? And I may have found something.
Whoa.
Right? Now, folks, I am not going to tell you that I bought this from their stores or whatever. This was an experiment from our side to see what the state of things are.
But it comes in a legit everything. I mean, it claims to be. It even says at the bottom, Maison Paris and everything.
Right? So let's go through it. Let's see. And I wanted to see this from a quality perspective, because for the longest time, everybody's been saying, oh, but the quality is not the same or this or that or whatever, right? And I thought...
Well, part of the claim that this was Louis Vuitton stuff that you would buy at Louis Vuitton, but made
and then shipped off somewhere else.
Some just goes out the back door.
Right? And there were various claims around it. There are various claims that said, oh, if it's made in China, it looks like this. If it's made in Paris, in Louis Vuitton's case, it carries a stamp that says made in Paris, and they're only allowed to put the made in Paris stamp on it when it arrives in Paris, or those, you know, we've seen the videos, right? We've seen all of the different things that go into it, right? So I thought, for the purposes of our wonderful audience out there, look at the things that we do for you. Look at the effort that we put into making sure that we find you good content, eh? Went all the way to Shanghai to come and see whether or not this was true. So yes, this was a purchase in Shanghai. I don't want this beautiful brand over here to think that we are imitating their products. We did this as a social experiment for our community, for our audience, to see the quality of the products that are being manufactured in China, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Let's go through this journey together, folks. Let's go through this together. The box looks very much like the box.
Well,
texture feels different.
A bit of wearing on it, but that might be because you mishandled it on the airplane.
That might be because I had to travel 20 hours with the box to get it back to South Africa.
Mm-hmm. Let us say, the box does not look Louis Vuitton to me. There's like a crease here as well.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Side note for the SARS and customs officials out there looking at this video and watching the video, we are not starting a business. This was a personal item. This is not going to go for sale. It was not imported maliciously or with ill intent or any of those sorts of things. It's a personal gift item.
But small thing. Someone who's worked in boxes, that there and there, that is cheap.
Okay.
That is cheap.
So we're learning, but we're learning, right? And we're learning.
So I worked in packaging back in the 90s.
You've done a lot of things in life, Si. DJing in the 80s, packaging in the 90s, finance in the 2000s.
About 6 weeks in packaging. But
so perhaps I might have an explanation for that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Around the boxing. Let me take out the contents of the box first, and then we'll get into that, right? So I'm going to put the contents off camera for a sec so I can do this with the box. I'll do it perhaps here so you can see it. Collapsible yes. box.
Ooh, fancy, fancy.
So perhaps that could account for still cheap.
No, those two there still.
Still panels. Okay, there we go. There we go. We thought it was that. It wasn't that. So there, let's just get this.
Hey,
back.
Look, this could be the reveal at the end. You could say, but this is, he actually went via Paris and this is the Roy McCoy.
You never know, right? You never know, folks. So, contents of the box. Just going to take this
is
out.
Is that it?
No, well, there's, okay. We can start
okay,
with this.
Okay. No, it just seems very small.
Yeah, well, again, they go through the effort of that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. And this is probably the longest reveal that we've done on this show. But you can kind of see, what does that say?
Well, the maiden front.
Right. And the smaller chain, there's a smaller chain that goes with it, kind of also looks, there we go. See?
So,
but that's not really the mark of the quality, right? That's
well,
not,
I have challenges here. So the maiden front, they have stitched over the C and the E at the end, which mm-hmm. like Louis Vuitton would never do that.
Okay.
Like, I mean, that would just not be passable. I would also argue because, so I used to make clothes as well in the 80s because, hey, I mean, you're living in Pantone in the 80s and you want the stuff you see in smash hits magazines that Boy George is wearing. You got to make it because ain't no one selling it. I think the stitching is frankly poor. My mother would whip me for stitching.
Okay. So that's on the accessory side of things. We're going to put the accessories aside for a moment. And I want to get into this, what we actually got out of it, right? Initial thoughts on the detailing.
Looks good.
It does, doesn't it?
Stitching is better.
The stitching is better.
No, and so important things, because I did a Google, your O's are round, not oblong.
Uh-huh.
Your spacing on the T's, the one T's a bit close to the I, but I mean...
Yeah, but I mean, if we're looking at whether or not we're looking at originals, whether we're looking at replicas...
What's important is there's consistency.
Yes.
Whereas oftentimes you won't get that level of consistency as the pattern repeats.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the pattern is repeating, is that it is repeating the same every time.
Mm-hmm.
And that does, yeah. I mean, let's be clear. I've never been within... Well, actually, no, that's not true. I once walked into a Louis Vuitton shop and then they walked me straight out. I mean, yeah, that's the closest I've been to the real deal. So I'm not quite sure what... Whoa, there's one inside.
Yeah, so this is a set, right? But I want you to take a look at the inside and I want you to take a look at like some of the smaller things, the smaller details, right?
So this stitching is much better.
Yeah, but that's the product, remember? So that's the product that we're selling.
Well, except if you're the luxury oak, you want to keep it top to bottom. I mean, the whole luxury is... I mean, your stitching here is much better. There's plastic on it, but I suppose that's to protect it.
Mm. Folks, for those of you that are listening to the show and not watching the show, I'd encourage that you go watch the show on YouTube. But just to give you an idea of what Simon is holding in his hands, he's holding a small Louis Vuitton purse that we are just looking at to examine just the overall quality and the look and the feel and how does the leather feel and how does the the craftsmanship feel. There's always been this misconception or this conversation in the past around, oh, Chinese goods are not of the same quality or of, you know, a higher standard of quality. And I found myself impressed with what was available here, right? I want to give you the smaller bag, Sam. And I want you to look at these little locks on the end. Look at the detail that they've got onto the LV thing. While you do that, the folks listening in on audio, I want you to listen into the sound of the zip and tell me if those that are experts at these products, tell me if this sounds like the zip it should be. No, wait, I'm pulling it wrong. Give me a second. Here we go.
The zip is sticking.
The zip is sticking. Is it supposed to? Is it not?
No.
It's not supposed to stick. So, again, I didn't expect that I was going to...
There's more.
There's like more. A Russian doll. But it's part of the set, right? So it's a three-piece set. But the whole point around it is the quality here, and you feel the leather. It didn't cost you anything near what it would cost you.
Let's be clear.
Yeah.
We are looking for discrepancies. We are looking to say it's fake. We are being overly
critical.
Pedantic, critical, considering the amount of skill we have in this, which is nothing. To be clear, I mean, that zip is sticky, but I mean, all in all, I mean, I don't know. Told me that was the Roar McCoy,
you'd believe it.
I think you get paid too much.
Right? So if I'm carrying this and I'm holding it, can you at first glance see the difference?
No.
You can't.
I don't think so.
And that's down to the craftsmanship, right? That's not anything to do with whether or not it's actually the LV ones made there or whatever. And again...
It is, okay, to that point, I mean, there's some issues with the stitching and there's some issues with the box. But I mean, broadly, to your question, is the craftsmanship of high standard? Yes.
Mm.
Yes. I mean, is it of Louis Vuitton standard? Maybe not.
Well, but again, Sai, this is from the supplier I found. This is not the only supplier in the country. I didn't find the factory. I happened to find one individual, and that individual also then didn't say, we make on behalf of Louis Vuitton. No, that individual said, we make these things that look like this. And if you have an original version of the item and you need an everyday use item that looks the same as the original, that isn't going to cost you the fortune and put your original investment at risk, then this is a pretty good substitute, a pretty good alternative. So something that the actual item, but to the naked eye seems very much like it could be. And who's going to really tell the difference? Who's going to really come and sit and say, let me inspect your bag?
No, 100%. I mean, no one. And that's the issue then. What about the poor person who paid top dollar for it? I mean, hey, can't help you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think my sister-in-law has a real Louis Vuitton and she's like railing against this. But
okay, so let's...
But yes.
So for context, I want to get the price, right?
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps do a comparative of how much something like this would cost, right? And I've just Googled it now, folks. The secondhand market has this exact set with the same color strap that we saw listed at 63,000 Rand. I can assure you I did not pay six. No, this is on the secondhand market online. So if you have to purchase it.
Like Luxity or something.
Luxity, those sorts of markets, right? So where you'd have to purchase it from a pre-existing, as a pre-loved item. There's another site that has it listed at 77,000 Rand. So 77,200 odd Rand there. So same site, just different straps, I suppose. So again, for a 60 to 70 or even 80,000 Rand bag, right, to then come back and say, is the quality the same? And is the quality worth it, right? So I took this out again because I wanted to take a look at, we felt the leather, we did everything, but we didn't do a sniff test. Apparently you must do these things, I don't know.
Okay.
To smell the leather. Does that smell like it would be of decent quality? It might not be the best quality, but does that smell like it could be somewhat authentic of sorts?
It smells like plastic, but I'm a smoker, should not be asking me.
Should not be asking Simon. But yeah, that's, so I think for this wasn't just an experiment around the luxury space, right? It was it was more than that for me when I was in Shanghai. It was around the state of what China is doing in the world. right? So I went there for, amongst other things, the Shanghai Auto Show. Mm-hmm. And that conversation was, a lot of exhibitors were there. BMW was there. All the German manufacturers were there. Mercedes-Benz, the works. But there was a strong contingent of Chinese manufacturers and a strong presence made. And it was a concerted effort by China to showcase to the world, hey guys, we're here to stay. Yeah. Hey guys, we're putting things out there. And it's not putting product out there that isn't of global standard and of global quality.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they put it up right China up against India. All the other ones.
I was saying before we started recording, a friend of mine got a Karoo pickup, whatever, Mahindra.
Yes.
About a third cheaper than the Hilux.
Okay.
Drove in it in the weekend. I mean, the real test is in 5 or 10 years when he breaks down in the middle of Zaire and he can't find Zaire doesn't exist anymore, Tanzania, whatever, and he can't find a repairman or Mahindra leaves. That's the real test of it. Although Mahindra's been around for a while already in country and a lot longer in India. But like it was a third cheaper, and I've driven Hiluxes and now this, and I'm like, yeah, if you told me this was a Hilux and blindfolded me, I would have said cool.
So this is the conversation I had a couple of weeks ago around the car market as well, to say the Chinese manufacturers, and it was a very clear conversation in China as well. The Chinese manufacturers are coming in at a lower cost inherently on all the products.
Yes.
And they're also realizing that they need to provide the maintenance, the support, the after sale service in the case of vehicles and all of that stuff. And they're doing that.
And they're doing it. And they're coming at quality. Now, there's partly a reason why they do it. And it's because what China does, and so take motor vehicles, is they say we want to become a global leader in motor vehicle production, most notably battery and battery sort of allied techs, etc. Not necessarily exclusive, hybrids, plug-ins, etc., etc. And they basically sort of create this industry where the majority fail. And they're like, that's cool. Mm-hmm. But some won't. Mm-hmm. So then BYD come through. Cattle come through with the amazing battery tech. I mean, I was reading up on some of their latest battery developments. I mean, and whereas in theory, capitalism does the same in that, you know, the good rise and the weak fall aside, but there's not that ability to innovate an entire industry from scratch. And that's what China can do. India, to a much lesser degree. I mean, Mahindra is part of, I think, part of the Tata Group, and they've got the capital and stuff behind it. But I mean, what they are pushing out in terms of vehicles now is insane at crazy prices. And to be clear, quality is by all accounts brilliant. Mm.
It's the same conversation we had 2 weeks ago when we had our last show to say it was drawing on that conversation from Stephen Bartlett around the rate of experimentation. They're not afraid to experiment. They know that not all the experiments are going to be successful, but the ones that are successful make up for the ones that are not, you know? So that kind of mindset is not a new thing.
Yeah.
It's something we have seen being played out for centuries.
Yeah. And to be clear, it is a command economy.
Yes.
That gives them a head start in it. But the point is, it's working.
So interestingly enough, on that command economy side of things, you'd think that a lot of people would have a sort of predisposition towards that or feel some kind of way around that, right? And you speak to some people on the ground around that, and they're actually happy with that. Mm. They're actually saying that when the Chinese government says, this is the industry we're moving in, this is the policy, this is what needs to be done, business adapts, business moves. Things just happen that way. Now, we can get into whether or not that's the right way to do it, whether it's not the right way to do it, what all of those things.
Sure, but look what it's done.
Exactly.
Look where we stand.
Look at the
today.
Results. Look at the results where companies are. I think when you're traveling in Shanghai, at least, I don't know if it's the same for all the other cities in all of China, but when you're in Shanghai, the number plates, the registration plates on the vehicles, you get a blue registration plate and a green registration plate. Now, ask the locals why they are different colored plates. The blue is ICE engines. The greens are electric engines.
Oh, wow.
Right?
Wow. How to name and shame.
No, no. It goes a step further. If you are purchasing an ICE, an electric vehicle, then the green plate is fine. Company registrations, all of those things are okay. If you are purchasing an ICE vehicle, a combustion engine, and you're going to get a blue plate on it, the registration cost is increased. So you are being penalized for registering an ICE vehicle in Shanghai, as opposed to registering an electric vehicle. And I think the penalty was, if I remember correctly, the gentleman I was chatting to said it was something in the region of, I think, between $5,000 and $12,000 for registering
an ICE
vehicle. And then I then said, okay, but then what does that then mean for the percentage of vehicles that are registered as opposed to ICE versus electric vehicles? And I think they are closer to the 50% mark of ICE vehicles versus EVs. What that then says from an EV and a PHEV perspective, and we'll do that. We'll have a conversation around EVs and the state of that. We're going to bring in an EV expert. I've got someone very special in mind for that. We know her. She does a lot of work in the EV space, which we're going to have her on the show soon. But what that means from a Chinese perspective is then that you're seeing more electric vehicles in places like Shanghai, right? And you'd think, who manufactures them? It's not Tesla. No. Tesla's not the big footprint. It's BYD that holds the market share.
Well, BYD can do a car for under $10,000. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the Slate peeps who came out with the sort of build your own thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, with your federal tax advantage, that's $20,000 and it hasn't got kit. Like, there's no radio or infotainment. Mm. That's added extras. Tesla comes in at what, $35,000 or $40,000? I mean, it's not that big. And again, the BYD is not a B grade car.
Mm-hmm. I saw something very interesting. I'm trying to remember who the manufacturer was of the electric vehicle, and we're getting a little sidetracked here on that. But you could, I think it was NIO, Chinese manufacturer, NIO. Mm. They've got stations. You don't go in and charge your vehicle.
Yeah.
You drive in, they remove the battery
and swap it.
And swap it and put in a new one, which I thought was genius because I can now still charge that battery, but not inconveniencing the consumer or the customer. And those charging stations are safe, secure, all of those sorts of things.
But I mean, Cattle's now got to the point where they can get you, and I forget the exact numbers, but a couple of hundred miles of range on 5 minutes of charge, which is what it takes to fill up an ICE vehicle.
So there we go. So equally
your long
the same.
Wait is like,
so supercharging, fast charging and all of that is going to... So this is the thing. Like, things are evolving, and at the rate at which they're evolving, the question then becomes, does it really matter if it's made in China? And that speaks to everything else, right? It speaks to the luxury goods, the vehicles, all of it.
So as long as so the risk for South African is always, and I remember about 15 years ago, my sister wanted to buy a Suzuki car. Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, but they knew, are they going to be around in a decade and a half? Because I'd had a friend who had bought a Citroen or something, and the brand came and then the brand left. And it was an absolute disaster. Mm. You're not sure about that longevity. I mentioned it with Mahendra a moment ago. I mean, are they still going to be around? How reliable are they? But the point is that, I mean, if they are, then why? I mean, now I appreciate some people might want a legit LVMH. I mean, I don't know, sure.
Yeah, if you've got the 70,000 rand to spend on something that's small,
100%.
Then sure.
And but in the vehicle space, I mean, because they've become expensive. I mean, a million rand for a Hilux.
Yes. Almost
a million.
So, and the Chinese alternatives are...
Your change from a Hilux doesn't even get you a new Louis Vuitton after you've spent a million.
And so the question around that also then becomes, if we are looking at the longevity and the sustainability of certain things, China is coming out with things like a 7-year warranty on a vehicle.
Yeah. So, well, that's actually a good point. So the Mahindra came 5-year, 90,000K service plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they are whipping.
See. So alternative to the typical brands that we've seen, the alternative to what has been the known staples, I suppose, in the world of luxury, in the world of automotive, in various aspects. You can go into construction, you can go into all sorts of different things, right? And
renewable energy.
Anything. Yeah, exactly. Renewable energies, the batteries, all of that. Mm-hmm. China has been progressing at a rapid rate and at a rate at which the rest of the world doesn't seem like they can match from an advancement perspective. Not saying that the world is slow, not saying that the world is lagging behind or not doing anything, but the rate at which China is not afraid to attempt and fail and succeed and attempt and fail and succeed is something that has to be applauded. It's something that has to be looked at and potentially even studied. I mean, I'm sure years from now, we might even see Harvard cases or Oxford cases or whatever cases around this, and how an economy of more than a billion people is able to do this, together, to do this on the same path kind of thing. And what learnings are there, right? So what can we learn from it in a country that needs jobs, that needs new sectors, that needs new innovations so that we can feed our economy so that we can feed the people, right? Not saying that we need to become a communist China kind of situation.
No, but I mean, but I like your point, and it comes back to the command economy. To be clear, the ANC government would love a command economy, but there's one difference between us and China. In China, when you do corruption, they chop your head off.
What happens here? Silence. For those that are wondering, for those that are listening, that was silence from Simon. We're going to leave the deep dive on that note. We're going to get into our investor insights. We're going to take a look at some warnings and updates from the FSCA. They have been very, very busy. And in this particular month, we're going to be taking a look at it in the context of how it affects the trading community, because some of their warnings have been very specific in that regard. But that is the deep dive on that note. Before we leave it on that note, I do just want to throw this out there to our community. Give us your thoughts around this. Give us your experiences around what you've gone through and the things that you've purchased. I know some guys have been purchasing from platforms like DHgate or something of the sort, the yellow app is what they call it. Give us your thoughts around that. Tell us what you've experienced, whether we're talking about cars, whether we're talking about luxury goods, whether we're talking about anything else. Just share your thoughts. These are our experiences from what we've seen and the first-hand account that we were able to gather on behalf of our audience. We do these things for you guys, but that's the deep dive, and we're going to leave it on that note. We wrap things up with our investor insights. We're taking a look at the latest raft of warnings from the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, especially where it relates to some of the sanctions that they have put in place. They have recently sanctioned signal providers and those that they deem to be signal providers. This comes up quite interestingly as this month, later in the month, we will be having a Finance Magnates Summit in Cape Town. I will be in attendance there. I will be speaking at that event as well. And Insider Exchange will be there as well. We'll be taking the entire brand there as well. Hopefully get you some more insights around that trading space and the trading landscape and all the regulation there. But from a FSCA perspective, this is a conversation that we've been having with the FSCA, at least I've been having it with them for the longest time, around how they view these service providers and whether or not they need to be regulated and all of that. And the FSCA came out very clearly more than a year ago with their viewpoint on these sorts of services and that they are regulated services. And then people didn't believe me when I put it out online. And then the FSCA started fining people, and then people started listening.
Then they listened. Yeah.
The latest raft of fines, there was, I think it was last week, 1.1 million rand and a debarment of 5 years.
Yeah. I know, no playing around here.
No playing around.
It needs to be, because the trick is that, no disrespect to the FSCA, it takes time for them to respond appropriately and quickly to things that are happening on the Twitters and the Facebooks and stuff. And they just can't move fast enough. So what you need to do is flip it the other way and just make it that when they move slowly and do catch up with you, it's going to hurt.
It hurts. It absolutely. It sends a very strong message. It really sends the message that we have been serious about this. And just because we haven't found you yet doesn't mean you can continue conducting business in the way that you want to. Now, obviously, the FSCA has come out with how they view this, the instruments and how they view the services that are being rendered. And we're going to have that conversation. We're going to keep having those conversations. I'm going to get them onto our show. We're going to do a segment with them. We're going to actually just get it from the horse's mouth, so to speak, around how they view these products. Because every time you say these things, people are like, oh no, you're against this, or oh no, this is not the truth, or whatever it is. But until people are fined and people at the end of the day lose their monies because some people don't operate properly, and you never really know, right? Nobody's saying that everybody out there that does this sort of thing is a bad apple, but it's important to understand that where it deals with financial services and regulated services, there is a regulatory body in place a reason.
And there are certain things. I mean, African Bank got bust for calling a loan an investment. I mean, there is language and terminology which, you know, insiders in the industry understand, but outsiders don't. And it's important for us to protect that language and terminology, not because we're trying to be, you know, hierarchical or anything like that, but because a loan is different to an investment.
Nobody's trying to gatekeep. Nobody's trying to keep from these investments. Nobody's trying to keep you from finding these good products.
No.
But every single time you find a bad product, you are giving the opportunity for those that are providing bad products intentionally to keep providing bad products intentionally. And Yes, you bring up the African bank fine. I mean, that was to the tune of some 700,000 rand.
Yeah, not a lot.
It's not a lot in the context of that bank, but it does make it clear that, as you said, language is important, messaging is important, and what you're saying to consumers is that much more important. So if as a regulated party they can be fined like that, what more when dealing with people that are unregulated or parties that don't have the correct regulation in place to provide the services that they do? So it's... Excuse me. So it's always important, folks, to look at what it is that you're looking to get from a service provider, what services they're offering, if they're authorized to do that sort of thing. And I think a lot of it comes down to education again, right? A lot of it comes down to, are we putting out the correct information out there? Mm-hmm. We've tried to do that as much as possible. Yeah. We've tried to use our own personal platforms, this show, everything that we do to get the correct messaging out there. And it's difficult because... we're just two people in a country of 62 million, right? We're just two people.
And it you know, our story is bleak. It's like, you get rich, but not in a hurry, whereas someone else is saying,
you can do it in a, exactly. You can do it on a Friday, be hot rich date by the Monday kind of thing. Yeah. So, and again, nobody's saying that that isn't possible. Nobody's saying that you can't hit a stroke of luck, have a really good opportunity that comes up and you become an overnight success or an overnight millionaire. But the message that's being peddled around the fact that that is the only way to do it, or that is the best way to do it, or that is the way that it should be done, is unfortunately a message that is going to end up in more heartache than anything else.
Yeah, it's just wrong. Short answer. It's just not right. And that's the key point. And I do think, I mean, and I appreciate it. I mean, FSCA has a tough job. I mean, they've got to obviously administer all the, regulate all the registered FSPs, and there are plenty of those.
Yes.
And, and within that, there's a tiny subsect going a little rogue, but then it's everybody else. And I remember once with someone who was running a scam, and I approached FSCA, but also the SAPs and the NPA, because maybe they've got, and they were like, I mean, they just don't understand what's happening here. You know, I'm like the Oku having a Dodge crypto, and they didn't understand crypto, and this was over a decade ago, but
And absolutely around the not understanding, I mean, there have been times where you've had conversations and people don't understand what a CFD is, let alone how the product works, how it, you know what I mean? So the world of financial products is probably the most complex in terms of the financial services offerings, right? And it doesn't get any easier. Nobody's anyone that says to you, we can make it seem like child's play. It's not. It's a complex world, and it's not for everybody. And you can't be going around saying to people, put your life savings into something you've never heard of, you don't understand, and all of those sorts of things. But on that note, folks, as I said, we will be in Cape Town for the Finance Magnates Summit that's taking place at the end of this month. We will be there as Insider Exchange. We'll do some engagements and content from that side of it as well for you. And I'm going to see if I can get the FSCA directly to speak to us on that matter, because I think it's such an important matter to be able to protect people, not just from the people offering services that they shouldn't be, but also from things like impersonators, right? People coming in pretending to be Simon Brown, adding you on TikTok or on Instagram or whatever and saying, hi, I'm Simon Brown, send me £100 because my enemies are after me, or whatever it is that the reason that they're giving you in that situation. Those are the things you need to be aware of, and those are the things you need to be avoiding.
Yeah, and it is just that. And it is, there's a compelling story always, but the compelling story is frankly bogus. But the reality is that people are keen. It's the whole betting thing, right? Which is like wholly unregulated. But the idea that your $10 can make you a million on the weekend. We have a country of poverty, there's an
everybody's looking to escape poverty.
Everybody.
And we're not saying that the poverty must remain. We're not saying that by any stretch of the imagination, folks. We're just saying that when you are looking to make these decisions, make a wise decision so that you don't regret the decisions that you end up making. We're going to leave that conversation on that note, and we'll pick it up at another time. We're going to look at what we are adding to our wall. This week, we are adding something that follows through from our deep dive conversation. We're adding a luxury stock to our wall. We're going to see where we put it, because this luxury stock has recently become the most valuable luxury brand in the world, dethroning the LVMH group in terms of valuations. And I'm referring to Hermes, the creators of the Birkin and the Kelly and many other luxury bags that are retailing for more than a car.
The more than a car part absolutely always hurts my head. I get you on that. But the fact that it's now the most valuable luxury brand. And I got to say, the brands are in many cases not as perhaps stand out. Some of them are, but I always worry, like LVMH. I mean, like down at the bottom there, they've got like whiskeys. It's like, come on, guys. Like, I mean, I know people pay money for whiskeys, but you know, they've got it. So there's Hermes, there's Gucci's, Versace, and all of those.
Guests. The Kering Group,
Ralph Lauren, Armani, the Balenciaga, loads of them. And the thing is that, in many senses, luxury is your classic timeless investment, right? Mm-hmm. Because you're buying stuff. And I mean, you were talking about in the early one. I mean, people are selling these luxury goods in secondhand markets. These are brands with, you know, 100-year histories. And frankly, every year that they continue, they become more desirable. They become more rich humans who can buy them. And therefore, the demand goes up. And they just still keep on bleeding out one fancy bag at a time.
Mm. So Hermes is definitely going to make our list. Do we like it enough to be blue chip?
It has to be blue chip. It's got Birkins and Kelly bags. Now, to be clear,
it has to be blue chip.
I didn't know about a Kelly bag about 10 minutes ago before I went Googling, and you can buy a secondhand one for 450,000 ZAR that has been slightly worn.
Yes.
Who is this person?
So the luxury space is quite an interesting space, and this stretches not just to the bags and stuff. It's the vehicles and all of that. It's the allure of the fact that there are, first of all, not that many pieces out there. Secondly, there's a waiting list, so there's a build up to it. There's an anticipation of saying you're going to have access to a limited edition kind of product. That is how Hermes has kind of built their brand, right? And even with accessing things like a Kelly, what did you say? It was a Kelly 28, which kind of sits between a Kelly 25 and a Kelly 30.
What does the number mean?
The number refers to the size of the bag. So, and I stand corrected out there, the luxury folks out there, please educate us, but this is just what I've kind of figured out. The 30 is a certain size, the 25 is a certain size, it's smaller. The 28 kind of sits between the two of them, but I don't know if there were enough 28s made or even that are out there at the moment. And so the rarity of the bag then adds to its value. Now, on your question around why a secondhand thing or secondhand item now costs more than the others is because then there is a waiting list. There is an inability to access that product. And so demand for that product goes through the roof. Similarly to how we spoke about the Ferrari conversation when we had that conversation. But folks out there that are specialists on luxury, reach out to us. Let us know. This is an interesting space because it's an interesting investment conversation. It's something I've been looking into for many, many years now. And I think that there's a lot that comes out of that space.
So you need to pause a second. A Hermes scarf.
Yes.
Second hand.
Yes.
7,000 rand.
So you need to purchase the scarf to have a sales manager assigned to you.
Oh, you can't buy it. It's been sold.
Oh, there you go. The world of luxury, mysterious and alluring in every which way possible. Folks, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but we are going to leave the note as we always do. We're going to leave you with an unfiltered opinion. We don't like leaving you without one, right? And this week's unfiltered opinion is specifically related to the events that are coming up on the 21st of May. That is, of course, the date set down by National Treasury for the budget. The unfiltered opinion is this. We hope that season 3 of budget 2025 in South Africa is not directed or produced by the same directors and producers that gave us season 8 of Game of Thrones. We can't deal with that disappointment again. Folks, let us know your thoughts. If you had to compare our expectations for budget 2025 season 3, which of the Game of Thrones seasons would you like it to resemble? That's the unfiltered opinion of the week. Until next time. Investing isn't hard. Just try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.